Good afternoon. This is Rob.
Good afternoon, Rob.
Hey, Rob.
Ryan and Barry.
Hey, everybody. Terrific.
Oh, no, Larry's not here. Is Larry here?
Nope, I don't hear.
Yeah, Larry's daughters are in town, and he took the day off, so.
I think he's gone for the week, isn't he, Ryan?
Yeah, he's gone for the week, but I was just saying, he's not in the office today.
So we're letting him escape.
Okay, so what's on your minds today?
Ryan, you want to go first?
Me?
You want me to?
You go first. I'm chewing lunch.
All right, so you chew lunch. So when we did that New York trip with these guys, we're still trying to figure out what direction to take this teaming effort because it's a great opportunity. Right now we're all aligning our licenses, but I personally think there's so many questions to be figured out before joining up with these guys that it's almost a little bit overwhelming as to what we want to do.
Do you remember Barry, just give Rob a quick refresher on what you're talking about.
So we were introduced to these guys up in New York in Garden City, another group of advisors, and they're one of the few groups within Morgan Stanley that's given stock option leads by the firm.
Corporate reinvestment.
Yeah, corporate reinvestment. And they're looking for partners in South Florida. They're in Florida. They don't have anybody to partner up with down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So we got introduced to them, and they want us to join up with them and become a part of their team. They want our assets under management to be part of theirs. And they want our T12 because it'll
credentials
and make them more valuable as a team, eventually getting them better leads the more T12 they have.
Right.
So it's a great opportunity for us, but we would have to add them to our book of business, and I think that's where the pushback is. You know, that's where I'm nervous, at least.
Well,
and they would have to do
the
same for us.
Let's start out by what was your impression of them?
My personal impression was they're trying to grow as fast as they possibly can to get as high up on the hierarchy as they can. The more they grow, the better their leads are. And I don't know if it's almost like, you know, like a business that just expands too fast and explodes, sort of thing. I don't know.
Rob, we have a little bit of insight into them because one of the guys in our office is actually a partner of their team that we've done a lot of business with. And, you know, we know of them. We do have a lot of background on them. You know, like, they're focused and they're very interested on, you know, like their stated goal is to get to $2 billion in assets, and they're $800 or $900 million right now, they said. So they're looking over the next 3 or 4 years to double in size, but they are doing more of a volume business. They've got 3 or 4 underlings that are handling inbound calls, and you know they're running a volume business, whereas we are not a volume business. And for us, in order to make this work and to also satisfy our Supernova requirements, we would essentially have to, let's just say we would have to handle 50 people, and we'd probably keep 5 and then pass off the remainder to partnering teams or our junior person, or, you know, like we couldn't keep all the people like they do.
Right.
We would have to just select the ones that met our criteria, so to speak, and then, you know, move on from there, in my opinion.
So what companies do they handle the stock option plans for, stock purchase plans or whatever they call it?
So to just clarify how this would work at Morgan Stanley, they are not the stock option team. They are, they essentially would be getting fed leads from the stock option teams for like outside money and any lead that comes to this program, like the team that kind of owns that relationship gets an automatic 30% cut on, so to speak. So any business we do, we're giving up 30% to the parent team that runs, let's say, Merck's plan or Pfizer's plan. So you're not getting every dollar on the business you're doing. If we were to do something with these, sorry, go ahead.
So let's say they've got a vice president who is reassigned to you. What is your initial activity with that person? And then, what's your initial activity with the guy from, he's a scientist with Merck. What would you be physically doing with him when you were assigned to him? Would he have just exercised options, or is this stock purchase plan? Or
no, the opportunity is getting in front of all these leads and turning it into something else.
No, Rob's asking what the initial thing is. The initial thing would be, yeah, to your point, Rob, I believe it's stock options, but outside of the retirement plans.
Okay, stock options
plan.
So he would have exercised some options. Somebody else is doing that for him, right? Somebody else is exercising the options, lending him the money, and then turning that account over to you.
No, I believe that we would take care of the options outside of the corporate retirement plans or outside of the master plan. This is for, it's my understanding is like this is non-qualified money that these people are coming into that's not run by the ERISA groups.
Right.
So somebody's
going to exercise
a thousand
options, right?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And our job is to get an appointment with them to discuss their other stuff that's held away and to try to roll more money into Morgan Stanley.
And why would they need you in Florida if that's a New Jersey company and everybody's in New Jersey?
They need feet on the ground in the local markets.
So Morgan Stanley's consolidated all this business into about 40 teams nationally. And the majority of those teams nationally right now currently park their asses in New York, Chicago, and California, and Atlanta. You know, like a couple of centers.
Yeah.
Morgan Stanley's looking to geographically distribute the leads to people that are close to these companies and executives. So essentially,
in South Florida. This would be a company that is exercising options in South Florida.
I think as of right now, it could be any of the lower four or five states, you know, anywhere from Alabama, Georgia, Florida, potentially, because there's really not a lot of stuff. And the way that they're running this is teams that have certified financial planners are getting preference, and teams that have a high percentage of managed money are getting preference, and teams that have high revenue are getting preference. So essentially, it's kind of a race to create super teams that can handle this business and get the deal flow.
What do they mean by they want to merge with you? What does that mean?
So with Morgan Stanley's teaming process, essentially, we would add each other onto all of our business at like 1%. So we're effectively running all of our business through numbers that all of us are on, even though they may be getting 99% and we may be getting 99% of our business. And after a certain period of time, once a certain amount of business flows through those numbers, then you're kind of considered a team under Morgan Stanley's compensation structure. And at that point, we would kind of be like a $5 million revenue, you know, alpha team, so to speak, with, you know, six advisors and, you know, a bunch of CFPs and a bunch of credentials and so forth. So that would make us more attractive to receive a larger amount of deal flow and a larger amount of leads.
Mm-hmm. Would you lose your identity then?
Would we lose our identity?
I think, would we have to give up the Boca Raton group is what he's asking, I think.
From a branding standpoint, if we were to move forward with this, I'm sure that they would prefer to have us operating under their titling. They qualify for a higher titling level that we do. Like, essentially, they're allowed to have the names Wealth Management and their team because they have, like, they're one of their guys is getting this family wealth advisor designation, and they also have one of what they call like a corporate insurance specialist kind of thing. Like they're more heavily credentialed than we are within the Morgan Stanley ecosystem. So. Mm-hmm. While we're the Boca Raton Group at Morgan Stanley, we could be Legacy Wealth Advisory at Morgan Stanley, you know, and kind of have a little bit more of a ka-ching. Plus, if we were to do this, our current payout bracket could potentially jump from, like, right now I'm at 41.5 and Barry and Larry at 43. It could jump to, like, 49 on the payout, even though most of it would be deferred. You know, most of the gain would be deferred. We'd still be keeping an extra 6 to 7%, you know, which is a substantial jump on a 40% payout. You know, that's another 15% of actual money in pocket.
Firms are waking up to this, as you know, right?
Well, firms, Morgan Stanley is catering to these mega teams. They're the ones
right.
that they are interested
but you
in keeping.
That they're also waking up to the fact that they're getting screwed on these deals, and so they're putting haircuts in the system so that you know you don't get the team bump. You guys may not have that yet, but other firms.
Oh no! I've been getting screwed for the last decade here, like, and I don't want to. I do not want to go off on a tangent here, but. Like Morgan Stanley does not consider Larry, Barry, and I a team, even though we've worked together for 15 years and we're the most team in the building. They don't consider us a team because we're not at $2.5 million in revenue. Period. You know, and because
this would make us into an official team.
Right. We would be eligible for team comp at the higher bracket. You know.
I don't see anything. I don't see anything really wrong unless these guys are jerks.
Well, I mean, the downside was is that if we left or did something after a year, that could be the problem.
Well,
then they'd have
if we left in 5 years, then theoretically our accounts would roll to those guys and they would have crack at retaining them, essentially. But I'd rather have our accounts roll to a team in New York than one in Boca, if that were to ever happen.
So everybody's on board with this? They'll let you do this?
What do you mean?
The management and everybody think this is okay?
We haven't discussed it with our managers from that standpoint, but the business would be local here, so the firm would be very much in support of this.
But I wonder if the branch would lose any revenue, Brian.
Yeah, no shit.
Sorry, what?
Where do you think the payout comes out of?
What, the partnering you're saying?
No, I'm saying the 41 to 49% comes out of your local manager's pocket.
You think so?
I know.
Yeah, of course.
Why? Huh? No, but that wouldn't make sense. Why would they be incentivized to have lower producing advisors?
Excuse me?
I said, why would they be incentivized to have lower producing advisors? They would rather have all advisors doing $2 million, wouldn't they?
If they had the revenues.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, like, we could discuss this further, but the idea is that, you know.
I mean, it's a great deal for you. There's only one party getting screwed.
Who's that?
Your manager's getting screwed because he doesn't have any more revenues.
But the incentive that he has is that it's going to produce more revenue than we would, so it becomes irrelevant with the extra revenue that we'd be generating would more than offset that. I mean, that's the thought process.
That's the thought process.
Is that the branch would benefit by having more revenue to boot.
Just go.
So even
just
though
go,
we'd be getting a bigger cut.
Before you go into that meeting, do your math.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
He's going to end up spending another $200,000 for no more revenues. So you got to explain to him how he's going to net $200,000 more to break even and then make money on it.
Huh, so you're saying that our manager is getting paid out more because we are at a lower payout bracket?
It's revenues minus revenues minus expenses equal profit.
So it would just be going against the P&L is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
I thought the corporate was the ones that were benefiting off of
us.
Well,
no, each branch has its own profit center, right? I mean, that makes sense, you know?
I wasn't thinking of it like that. I just thought that the firm was getting to keep that nice juicy spread on on things.
No, a portion of his pay comes from profitability. Not all of it, but he gets paid in most of it. That's how they pay people, right? Profitability. The other comes from you guys doing, you know, the critical few objectives. Number of financial plans, all kinds of little things, but
yeah, we're doing all those. We're doing all the modern wealth stuff. We are leaders on all that.
Right, but that doesn't produce any. That doesn't produce any revenues. That's just nice. Okay.
Well, no, they're actually bonused on those numbers right now.
So the point is that, yeah, the point is that the only thing that really counts is profitability in the bottom line. So you just have to go in there saying, we're going to do an incremental $1 million of revenues, so you'll be net positive from this.
So if Barry and Larry were doing, let's just say we picked up 6% payout on $2 million, it's 120 grand. So we only need to grow by 5% for them to break even, right?
Right.
Yeah,
No. He doesn't get all that 120, right?
No, I'm just saying we would have to generate, I don't know, I haven't looked at it from this point of view.
Right. You're increasing costs, which are the net bottom line figure. So what do you get? What do you need to produce in order to have $120,000 bottom line profit?
But if the firm is retaining all of that as deferred comp anyway, does it even matter? I mean, they're not giving us the money.
They're still expensing it.
It doesn't matter to us. He's just saying that management might not be backing us on this if it's gonna hurt the branch's P&L.
The question is, does it bring in more revenue to the branch as a whole?
That's what Rob's saying. Rob's trying to say, like, is it gonna be a net positive to Mike, or how long will it take for it to be a net positive to Mike? Like, if it takes us 3 years to break even, it's not gonna be something he's gonna be real stoked about.
Yeah.
Now, if we grow by 500,000 the first year, then I don't think anyone has a problem with it, right?
Right. He probably gets a bottom line return of, you know, what, 15%. So, you know, he needs to He needs to do $1 million. You need to do $1 million more for him to make an extra $150,000 bottom line. So you need to, if he's going to expense $150,000, you need to do an extra $1 million for him. It's a business, guys. It's a business. Okay, I was there.
Doing an extra $1 million is not a small feat.
No, but you better, all I'm saying is when you go in, you better have a plan that's going to make him money. You got a bunch of constituencies, right? He's one of them.
But so my question is this, and without being crass, like, we're getting screwed by the company. Like, all my buddies in the office make 5 to 7% more than I do because they're partnered with teams that are on higher payout grids. And because Barry, Larry, and I are more equal, and because Barry and Larry are not considered, like, the 50% cutoff level for being team comp eligible, I'm taking a hit every year below Barry and Larry in addition to being way below all my friends. They're just keeping that money. I'm doing the same business. I'm doing better business than a lot of them. But
Right. Just
because I'm not tagged to somebody who's doing $1.5 million, it doesn't count or whatever. So you're telling me that, like, my managers are, I guess, quote-unquote, enjoying that extra profitability getting credited to their branch by the firm sticking it to me. I mean,
well, I wouldn't take it so personally. Okay, you're not getting screwed. You're in one of the greatest jobs in the world that pays out ridiculous amounts of money to all of us, or did, for work that where you're not going to be on the top of a building in some scaffolding trying to put a piece of steel together. Okay, this is good work. It's wonderful work, and you get paid very well for it. Okay. All I'm telling you is the reality of running a branch, okay? Now, I don't think it's fair that people should, because they are on teams, get a pay increase. There's no net revenues to the firm, okay? So because other people are ripping off the firm doesn't mean that you're getting screwed, okay? Someday they will adjust that. As it is now, they aren't. So there's no reason that you shouldn't try and take advantage of that along with everybody else. But all I'm telling you is when you go in all excited to tell your manager, don't be surprised that he's kind of lukewarm on the idea. It doesn't mean it's a bad idea, and it doesn't mean he won't do it. But just know where your constituencies lay. I always had to think about all the different constituencies whenever I was trying to make a decision. Who is this going to screw? Somebody's losing.
In this case,
your manager, you know, can't hire two sales assistants. Because he's got to pay you guys more money. Hey, I think you can do another $1 million because of this. Go for it. Just understand.
How long? So, all right, you're our manager, Rob. We come to you. Manager Rob, we're really excited about this new opportunity. We think it's going to, you know, we've been talking, our biggest issue for us as a team is we have a very high close ratio, but we need to get in front of fresh people. We think this is going to help drive us in front of fresh people. It could also help support your WAA, your financial advisors in training, as we could pass more business along to them and increase your success rate with those new hires and so forth. You know, potential benefit there because they're heavily bonused on their success. So, you know, Manager Rob, what do you think of this? You know, like, are you going to say, what are you going to say? Are you going to say, guys, you think it's going to get you $1 million in 4 years?
I have a problem with grace at school.
Like, kind of, you understand this isn't going to be a day one net accretive thing. Now, I'll also throw it out there that manager Rob, you know that basically Barry, Larry, and I are out of contract in 2 years. We're completely free of any beholdenness to Morgan Stanley on a financial basis other than whatever's in our deferred comp. We have no contractual obligations. All of our stock options are vested. Everything's done on that point. So we have another 2 years that we are essentially locked up here. And after that, if we're not happy, we could take our chips elsewhere. And our other manager has been pulling people from here left. Our old manager's pulling people left and right over to Raymond James. I'm not going to say that to him. I'm just saying you know that in the back of your head.
Well, he doesn't. He doesn't think like that. But
I guarantee you, he's thinking like that. He just lost a $4 or $5 million producer.
Really? That's sad.
He's lost seven guys in the last 4 months. And when I mean seven guys, I'm talking a handful of them had 25, 30 years here. And, you know, one guy, you know, he just lost a $4 or $5 million producer, and he lost between the other six that just left another $5 or $6 million, $7 million. You know, like, they're reeling down here. Like, our regional manager just got replaced, and they are looking to stanch the bleeding for sure.
I know, Tim.
Right.
Yeah, Tim Burns. So I think you. Look, in reality, if you sign up, you're in, right? You're locked up with the firm, right?
Well, we have another year and a half where we're paying off a guy's widow that passed away. So we would never do anything to jeopardize that. We also have another 2 years of repaying my forgivable loan for my stock options that the guys are getting garnished on for the next 2 years.
But if you, my point is that if you sign up with these guys in New York, you're in. You're in.
Essentially, that would, yes, that if this worked and the honey was flowing, then it would be very hard to leave that source, so to speak.
Yeah.
It would make us much stickier, yes.
So, I mean, that's a big issue. I think you would see how good this is to put this all on the table so that when you walk in there, like, oh, this is so great, and you don't get a so great, you have some things to talk about, which are
We would not have expected that response, that just came as a huge surprise to me, and not much does when it comes to these types of things. But I did not look at it in that manner at all.
The advantage of not hiring an MBA as your coach.
Right.
But a former manager, director. I think like that. And they do, of course. You know, these are businesses. So, yeah, I mean, if you guys, I don't see it hurting your prestige any. I see it as enhancing your prestige. What are they going to, try and manage you guys, or are you on your own, or if you're part of the team, how's that going to go?
They have certain, like, call scripts that they typically utilize for the initial contacts with the newer sales advisors and so forth. But I don't think that they're looking to necessarily roll us up into their team operationally on a day-to-day. Like, we're not going to have morning conference calls and so forth. They're essentially looking to grab a slice of the pie and get paid on it. And we're a way for them to get paid on the business down here that they would not be getting otherwise. So
what's the timeline? I mean, you're sharing 1% for how long, and then when does it get real?
So theoretically, and they haven't said any of this, like, we haven't talked exact figures yet. But what I'm imagining is something along the lines of we would be getting, you know, we'd probably be getting to keep 50 or 60% of the business, and then the remaining 40 or 50% will be split amongst the guys in New York and then the original team that's generating the lead for us, so to speak. So we would not be keeping 100 cents on the dollar at all. But it's more, like I said, it's more of a volume type business.
I thought it was like an 80-20 or a 70-30 split. Where does the 50-50 thing come?
Well, I'm saying 30%, it's my understanding that 30% of the business has to go to the original team that's running the plan. The team we'd be working with is not the original team. They're a corporate reinvestment team. So it's the most business on these leads would be 70% is my understanding. Only 70% of the pie is available.
So you start with 70% of the pie, and so you split that 50-50?
No. I think that it would be something along the lines of that 70%, we would get to keep 50 of it, and they would get 20 of it, or something like that.
Okay.
They're essentially looking to get like a referral cut on the business sent to us. Is what I am anticipating. I do not think that they expect us to work for 30% of anything. You know,
okay,
like
so that would be you know, important, right?
But yeah, of course.
Timeline? Let's say you did this split now, and we got this 1%, 99%. How long does that go?
Well, that would basically happen. That would happen on all business, essentially.
Right. That's day one. But then you said there would be eventually a merger.
No. So by having each other on at 1%, once half of our revenue flows through those numbers after like 6 months to a year, then we would become a team in Morgan Stanley's system, and we would be eligible for the combined payout rate, and we'd be eligible for a larger position in the firm, essentially. But we have to have revenue. All of our revenues would need to flow through numbers that all of us were on. Like all 12 people have to be on the numbers. So on day one, month one, if we all put each other on all the revenues, then only 1/12 of our trailing 12 would have gone through the new team. So it takes like 6 to 9 months for a team to get essentially team status.
And that would give you 6 to 9 months to decide that this is a bad idea or a good idea.
Well, starting at day one, we would be able to we'd be eligible once we got all of our licenses aligned with states and all that stuff, then we would be eligible to start doing business together. So let's just say starting January 1, at that point we could get leads, and if we closed the business, then we'd have different numbers that were set up at, you know, 30, 20, 50 or whatever the split would be. And we could do that business in those numbers, but we wouldn't be eligible for the different payout, and we wouldn't be treated as a team until 6 to 9 months later. And at that point, we would be eligible for higher payout and so forth.
So I think, what's your next steps?
Well, quite frankly, the next steps are to determine if we want to do this. And if we want to do this, then we have to get going on getting all of our licenses and everything. Now, we would have to have like 45 states, because they have plans and stuff. They have people all over, and everyone has to be licensed in order to get compensated. So we would have to – and we have to pay for our state licenses if we don't do a certain amount of revenue there. So – we would all have to register for all 40 states, and that would cost us $2,000 a piece to do that probably. And then we would all have to make sure we had insurance license in all those areas. That way, if we're selling life insurance or whatever, we can all get paid on that. And then we would have to, once all of our licenses are aligned, at that point, they can start sending us leads to work. And if we close the business, then we would have that new business done at whatever ratio we decided on.
Okay, so the next step That's the administrative next steps. The political next steps and strategic next steps would be what?
We have to have a conversation with our manager to see if this is something that they're going to bless or if this is something that they're going to give us shit about, you know, from a P&L standpoint, I guess. You know, like, we're well-liked by management, but we're not, what's the way to say it? We're not super tight or anything, you know. We have all new management over the last few years, so.
Next step is to meet with management, get their blessing. And the following step, would you need to go and visit this team again?
Yeah.
And have a contract?
Yeah, well, contract would have to be whatever the firm's joint production agreements. Like, they won't let us write custom contracts. So any agreement we entered into on a split basis would have to go through Morgan Stanley's traditional forms, so to speak.
Okay, so you can find that out through your local branch?
Well, there's no real group contracts at Morgan Stanley. Essentially, any group business is done by going through our system and establishing a JPN, a joint production number, that is titled as a group, and then all members in the group are subject to the binding terms of that contract. So if there's a dispute over the client, the lead FA on the number would typically have preference. So on the business we're doing down here, we'd want us to be lead FAs. You know, we have a certain arbitration through management that basically says the managers can basically wave their wand and figure out how they want to do this. And if you disagree with that, there might be one other step, but it's you know, you're kind of, if things don't work out, they basically rely on management to decide how it gets split up. So,
all right.
In the event of a dissolution.
Right. All I'm saying is just be very aware of what the rules are. Okay.
Oh, yeah. My biggest concern is, like, I don't want it to distract from our core goal of, you know, getting our practice where we want it to be. And,
right,
you know, like, if we're doing so much business that it's a distraction, then that's great. But what I'm seeing happen from our team is that Barry's having a hard time developing new relationships that aren't personal introductions from existing clients, and I don't see that changing. Just the way he's wired, he's not as social as Larry and I are. Larry is out there a lot more. He plays tennis. He's part of the community. And then I'm just, quite frankly, better at consolidating assets and, you know, getting referrals from existing relationships. I'm the existing relationship guy. Barry's much better at getting new relationships in the door when introduced to them. But unless he's introduced to them, he's not finding them. He does not have a large social drive or network. So we're seeing this as a great way to drive new business into the door. And quite frankly, you know, he's wired much more to close new strangers, so to speak, than I would be. But it brings up another layer of issue where, like, in the last 2 years, I've brought in about $25 million. And the two of them have probably brought in less than that. And I talked to the other team in New York, has a guy on the team like me. They have a Ryan, essentially. And he's kind of worked it to where on any new business, he's splitting it with the senior partner 50-50. You know, and they kind of have a legacy book that they're working through over time. But on all the new business, it's kind of coming through as equal. And the more I think about it, that might be the only way that this new type of business would work for us, because otherwise we're going to be jockeying for position against each other for the choice clients. You know what I mean? Like, it won't be who's best. It's kind of going to be like we'll be fighting over these relationships to try to bring them in the door, and there's also a random distribution of leads.
Yeah, there should only be one person on the team doing this.
You running this business, you're saying?
Correct.
Right. So theoretically speaking, let's just say we made that Barry. You know, we don't want to have a situation where it's like this business is basically getting handed to us, and he's now saying, well, I've brought in, you know, $50 million in the last 2 years, and it's all this stuff that's getting handed to us, and then having him say, I'm now a much more integral member of the team, you know, and there's a lot of questions on the horizon with that, you know. So,
yeah, I think you guys have to work that out so you don't.
Let me ask you. Barry's not on the phone with us right now, and Larry's not on the phone with us right now. So my question to you is, like, we recently had this $11 million prospect, and it came from. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I just tried to. I stopped the recording.
So we just had this $11 million prospect in New Jersey, and it came from an attorney that worked with one of Larry's best clients. Now we gave that. That CPA. We gave that CPA one of Barry's best clients. So the CPA has two clients from us that are each 7 to 10 million. So he looks at us as players. So he actually introduces us to this guy who's got 11 million. And we go up there to New York and sit down with him. And the guy's a former chief investment officer at Kemper, Payne Webber, Fidelity. He like wrote a lot of the platform software, like really smart guy. And in the meeting, I end up doing like 2/3 of the talking. Like, you know, it's clear that this guy's talking to me quite a bit as opposed to that. I come back and things progress, and it turns out we have a call, like this guy gets back in touch with us, and we're going to have a call with him on, let's say we have a call with him on Wednesday, and I go out of town with my family for like 3 days, and I give the team a 4-page executive summary of all my thoughts, psychology, all the different ideas I'm thinking of, and I come back and like very little's been accomplished. And like I literally like I laid into all of them, and I'm like, you know, this is $11 million. Like, does anyone give a shit? You know, like it's pretty serious. And like they all basically were like deferring to me on everything. And then we end up doing like all the prep, and I basically end up having to prep the majority of the shit anyway. And then like after the call, Larry's like, if this guy comes on board, I want him to work with you, and da 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 da. And like I'm trying to figure out like the best way to approach this, but like as time continues to go on, Rob, we're going into the higher caliber clients. Like I'm not sure what the best technique is sometimes with trying to handle these situations, but it's like not everyone's stepping up their game, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I'm having a hard time believing that I am the least important member of the team, or at least not a, you know, equally contributing member of the team. But what's holding me back, honestly, is that they both have larger books of business than I do. When I actually do an evaluation of all the existing revenue and the existing managed money, the ratio we're at is actually pretty accurate. It's just, I feel like that's all in the past, and a lot of that is people that we don't even really want to work with in the future. And over the last year to two, I feel like I'm progressing, and you know, it's like I don't feel like I deserve to ask them for equal share on the business that's been accumulated over the last 20 years by them. but I feel like it may be time to ask more for an equal share moving forward on new business that we're driving.
That's fair. Yeah, I think that's fair.
How would you address the legacy book of business? Would it just
I'd
be like?
I like what you're saying. Look, you guys earned that. That's it. That's our split. Okay. But on the new business, we're partners.
So I think with this new thing, if we do this with the other team, it's going to have to be like that.
Right.
I don't think there's any way to not be like that. Otherwise, we're all fighting over everything.
Right.
It's hard. This is not an easy business.
Well, everybody says, well, it's not about the money. It's about the principle. It's always about the money.
No, it's very much about the money. You know, like it's,
right.
I tell people, this is a beautifully simplistic business. You know, if you're doing $10 million, you can walk into the branch office, branch meeting in your boxer shorts and the manager will laugh, you know, like, oh, you're such a card, you know, like if you're doing $200,000, you do that, then you'll be, you know, at Ameriprise in 5 minutes. Yeah. You know?
Right.
It is what it is, but you know, I'm just everyone feels like they're worth more than they are in their mind, you know, like, so I don't know. I mean, you have been working with us for a year and a half. I think you have a pretty good lay of the land at this point, you know, like.
Yeah. The reality is the reason I wanted to be clear about that is you know, need to know what's really going on, right? They don't just give away money. So
right.
When you go in there all excited and happy that you're going to get a huge new payout, no, your manager's, you know, that's really important. Now, that's going to take care of a few of your issues, right? But you got the other issues of, you know, absentee partners. The thing that I would focus on for credibility's sake is the pipeline tool. You that's a very powerful tool, and you bring it up, you meet twice a week, you know, or once a week, and you go through the pipeline. That is a very powerful tool. Hi, who just checked in?
Hi, it's Dana Rosewag from the York Morgan Stanley office.
Okay, Dana, hi. I'm just finishing up with another call. Can you just hang up for a second and then I'll
I sure
I'll
can.
There.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So I would just say, you know, that the pipeline tool will establish the fact of who's doing what on a regular, constant basis. I have another team that's using it very effectively. They brought in 18 new relationships, you know, all meeting, not all of them meeting their minimum, but pretty close. And they've got a nice minimum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got $650 million in assets. And so they're, but all three members of the team are bringing in business. The newest member is bringing in more. But they're, you know, one of the members does planning, the other does the investment process, but they're all bringing in new business. And there's sense no sense of animosity among the team. And I'm committed. I think it's because of the pipeline tool
there is animosity and tension on our team.
I know there is. I can feel it in your voice.
Well, not actually. It's worse from Larry than me. You know, Larry's got a lot of issues from many years of working with Barry, and you know, I need to calm him down often because Larry's kind of one of those guys where he's solid and he's going to put in his 40 hours in the office and all that stuff, and you know, Barry will put in 15 hours and do comparable revenue, and Larry goes fucking crazy because he knows like Barry could be the best of all
right.
of us. You know,
I'm aware of those kinds of guys. I gotta go because I got another call, but been a good call. I think you got some marching orders. I got a better handle. It's not completely clear yet, I know, but you feel okay?
When do you think I should talk to the guys about my concerns?
Just think about it. Don't put it off. It's going to make you crazy. You won't sleep, so get it done.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Just
I appreciate
it. But have you done the homework? Do the homework.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Bring in all the assets you brought in, the number of relationships, et cetera, et cetera. Give them credit. Find things that they did well so they don't feel like you're picking on them. You know, but then just say, look, I love you guys, but this is the trend. And so my, you know, let's be fair here.
Okay, yeah. If Barry brings in that $800 million account, then I have no problem giving him
right.
a bigger piece of the pie on that.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.